It's KJZZ's Here and Now. I'm Steve Goldstein. Since the Valley's light rail line became established, supporters have passionately opined that transit-oriented development would have a positive impact on the area's economy. Parts of Phoenix and Mesa have seen those results. Now, as of last weekend at 3rd Avenue and Camelback, a new combination of Changing Hands Bookstore and the Southern Rail Restaurant from award-winning local chef Justin Beckett is ready to take that impact to another level. Lorenzo Perez is co-owner of Phoenix-based Venue Projects, which developed the Newton, and he joins me now. People have probably heard a lot about Changing Hands. They've also heard about Justin Beckett's new restaurant. Why are those exciting sort of foundations for the Newton, and what else is in the mix?
Well, I think what's exciting about Changing Hands is they're iconic. They just celebrated 40 years in the Valley, and I'm a native, and if you've grown up here, you remember them on Mill, you remember them in South Tempe, and so to get an opportunity to bring them into Central Phoenix was exciting, and to put them in an iconic building like the old Beefeater was an amazing opportunity. I really got to credit my business partner for that one, John Kitchell. He's the one who said, what if we... Could you imagine if we put Changing Hands in the old Beefeater? What would that look like? And that's where it all started.
Can you describe that space? Because there are some people, I mean, I've been to Beefeaters as someone who grew up here, but a lot of people haven't. It's 3rd Avenue and Camelback, but what did it look like before you guys got your hands on it, or what does it look like now?
The condition we got it in, if you've ever watched the movie The Blair Witch Project, I got Justin Beckett used to joke about it as we'd walk through it. It was... pretty tired, and unfortunately had been vandalized and picked apart, and the inside was
How
really...
How long had it been closed?
I believe since 2006. Okay. But we got involved with this project 2010. We were introduced to the former owner, a lady from San Francisco. She's an investor, bought it as part of a vision for a much bigger project. We all know what happened with the recession, and she was sitting there going, I don't know what to do with this. Somehow, some way, through, I think, a city planner, she made contact with us and asked us if we'd be willing to meet with her and do some visioning and creative planning. And it was through that process, it was basically an extended due diligence process where we went through and analyzed the building. We walked away from it pretty surprised. One, the community was really outspoken about wanting to save it. They mentioned in some community outreach charrettes that they wanted a place that was for the community, a gathering space, if you will. And the third thing was the city wanted it. They viewed it as, back then it was Councilman Simplot, was pretty vocal in terms of how important it was. That, and there was this nostalgia around it that was really cool. I grew up at 19th Avenue in Camelback area, went to Central High. Mm-hmm. And so I, you know, in the 70s and 80s, was always going by it and always knew what a big deal it was. And we got to go there once in a while on the very rare, you know, big occasion.
Right.
It was just really interesting.
What does it look like now? What are some things that will make this place stand out? What are some elements you've kept from the old Beefeater restaurant?
Sure. So we kept the entire original core mid-century building, and it really does. We really put a lot of thought and attention into preserving sort of what we call the soul and essence of what the Beefeater was. And we really wanted to express what was interesting about the Beefeater is that it was this design disconnect. You had these mid-century lines, and then you had this, on the interior, this old English interior design scheme. I think what was interesting about the Beefeater is it was very intro-focused, meaning you didn't really know what was going on inside from the outside. And when you're inside, you really had very little connection to the outside. So we told people, listen, our objective is a modern-day reinterpretation of what the Beefeater once was, which is a community gathering space centered around food and gatherings. But we needed to make it work for today's world. And today's world really appreciates that indoor-outdoor connection. We really wanted to celebrate the beauty of the space, and we wanted people, whether they're traveling on the light rail, on Camelback as they're walking in, that there was no guessing that it was a people place. We pushed the restaurant out on Camelback. We removed some old additions that were added in the 80s and 70s. They really kind of hid the original spirit of the building. And we became aware of what the original building looked like from an old photo that the Arizona Contractors Association shared with us that showed that sawtooth roof line. And we all got excited. We just thought, if we can pull those off and extend that look out to Camelback and really floor to ceiling, look inside, you know, we really thought we'd have a dynamic space.
So an iconic spot, as you mentioned.
Yes.
3rd Avenue and Camelback. Based on the recession, based on some other things, I don't think that's been considered a real hot area.
No.
Why do you have hope going forward, and how much of that has to do with TOD, transit-oriented development?
You know, that area really got impacted in a negative way. It seemed to be like one of the last areas along the TOD Here you are at Central and Camelback, but you're west of Central, and us old Phoenicians know the stigma of west of Central and the avenues. I think that's partly part of it. I think what's interesting about this, the Beefeater sort of sits at 3rd Avenue, and it's right between Central, right between 7th Avenue. I think what, you know, Councilman Simplot and Pastor's office expressed to us is that if we had a project that was community-focused, that preserved sort of the scale and the vibe of old Phoenix, it could be catalytic in terms of stimulating reinvestment, rehabilitation of neighboring businesses, its proximity to the light rail station. There's just a lot going on there that excited us. Not only did it have a unique architecture, it had a story, it had unique context, being next to some really cool historic neighborhoods in Medlock Place, Pearson Place. So all of it came together, and to us it was just this grand opportunity to do something exciting and creative there.
From now on, so we have the opening of Changing Hands, we have the opening of Southern Rail, which Correct. Is open for dinner now, eventually open for lunch soon.
Yes.
And what's your role from now on going forward?
So one of the unique things that we do is we invite our anchor tenants to be partners in the building. And so Changing Hands and Southern Rail are equity holders in the building with us. They each own a 20% share. So we are an active management group. So we'll be very involved in the day-to-day management. We have some big ideas and plans to really program and activate the space so that it stays dynamic and something that's interesting, doesn't become stagnant. So we have this common area. We were able to preserve the old banquet facility that a lot of stories, a lot of events happened in. Changing Hands will do a lot of events there. One of the things we tried to do in the design and programming of the project was create synergy amongst our tenant partners. And one of the things we do differently than a lot of commercial developers is we call it curating our tenants. We actually go out and look for and recruit a tenant. We don't go to open market and say, come to us. We really look to see who shares in the value, understands the mission of the project, and who's going to be a great fit, because we feel like together, if we can put the right mix together, the property's going to be just one dynamic experience.
I'm sure there are some people out there who are going to say, couldn't they have waited till September maybe, because summer in Phoenix can be tough.
Yes.
Is that a worry at all?
Yeah, we wanted to open last. I think originally we knew it, we voiced it, we owned it, that we had an aggressive schedule. We were going to try to open in November, and you know, once we peeled back the building, we discovered some structural items. We discovered that the building's roofing had leaked for 6 years, and so we had to remove the roof skin and really decided to take our time and make sure we did it right. We're long-term holders on the property, so it just fell where it fell. We tried to open in spring, and it, you know, one thing after another, the summer schedules of our team, of the city team, trying to get it permitted, people coming and going. So the project was just complicated, and it drug out a little bit longer. It is the summer, and obviously anyone who's in retail knows that summer there's a drop-off. I think we always try to find the silver lining. We knew there was a lot of anticipation from the community. As we saw last Friday night, we were completely overwhelmed with the support all weekend, continuing to see there. I think it'll be nice if things do kind of back off a little bit, so we can kind of refine and learn from this initial output and kind of get our feel for the property. Mm-hmm. There's this sort of growing in phase that we'll go through, and it'll allow us to refine and fine-tune it, if you will.
Lorenzo Perez, co-owner of Phoenix-based Venue Projects, which developed the Newton at 3rd Avenue in Camelback. Lorenzo, thank you.
Thank you.
The Newton is a hot project, one that's expected to do well, but are there ongoing challenges and potential pitfalls? Larry Ortega is executive vice president with Colliers International in Phoenix. He specializes in the sale and leasing of retail properties. What are your thoughts on the location of the Newton? What else is going on in that area and other areas of Central Phoenix we should be excited about?
The area is turning around, and especially with a project like the Newton, that's an anchor tenant to that block. I mean, that's a game changer. That is a whole community rolled up into one, and will change the complexion of that area.
Is there more promise and more hope for those smaller sort of multi-use or more retail-oriented areas? Is that something that, if that works, we could be seeing a lot more of that?
Yeah, I think what's going to happen is, which is happening, is there a return to local. And by that, I mean what we see like in the Central Phoenix area, the restaurants. We're not seeing a proliferation of chain restaurants. we're seeing chef-driven restaurants coming into the area, and that's unique and a great change. And so what's going to happen along Camelback is, you know, additional buildings will be purchased and hopefully rehabbed and reused.
Larry, you've been in the Valley since 1980. A project that was a lot more recent than 1980 I wanted to ask you about that just came to mind for me. There was an area on Grant Street not that long ago that had a Poison Pen bookstore, Arcadia Farms, and an art gallery. We always hear location, location, location. The options that people had seem very similar to what we're hearing from the Newton. What is the difference between a really successful project and one that might not be as successful?
That project was in really in the downtown area. ASU hadn't really been on board yet, and you know, we didn't have a downtown. We didn't have a residential downtown. A little bit ahead of their time and some of those other factors.
So it's not just location, it's also timing. And how difficult is it to know when trends are going a certain way?
Boy, if I knew that. Well, we definitely can see the trends in central and downtown Phoenix. What's happening with everything from residential to the commercial market to the changing of culture downtown and what people are interested in. And to see now that we have all parts of the valley are, you know, understanding that it's more than just, you know, sports entertainment downtown. There's the cultural scene, which has been there for a long time, but is now kind of reawakening. And our art scene that, you know, we always thought of Scottsdale as being the preeminent art center in the Phoenix Valley, that now downtown Phoenix is really starting to propel itself in that direction.
I wonder if we could talk a little bit about transit-oriented development. That was something that some people were fairly cynical about, whether this could work in such a car culture like this. So how promising do you think that aspect is?
I was one of the cynical. I really was. Okay. I looked at it and said, oh, you know, the ridership will be this and that. And I'm wrong. I see now the benefit of being on light rail, including the development benefit. I mean, the perks that you get by being in that transit district is going to propel development. And we see it on Central Avenue. Buildings that are somewhat functionally obsolete, office buildings that are functionally obsolete, they're being purchased, they're going to be torn down, and residential will be replacing them. And we see a lot of that.
So we should expect that to be a growing trend because, again, there are people who are cynical about the idea of more people wanting to live in that downtown area, and yet we're seeing the density increasing, and we're seeing younger people going there, too.
We're seeing younger people, and we're also seeing people my age that are downsizing. I have one of my clients downsized from 9,000 square feet in Paradise Valley to about 1,400 feet.
When it comes to the transit-oriented development or Camelback Corridor, other areas of downtown and central Phoenix, how much of the growth and success is going to rely on people not just moving downtown, as you mentioned, your Paradise Valley client, but folks who want to come in from areas where people might have a little bit more spending money? How important is it that those people are drawn there as well? And how often do they have to be drawn there? Like, can it be once a week for a music show? Can it be once a week for a restaurant? Or do they have to come down more often than that?
One of the things that I've been noticing and having worked in that central Phoenix market, it used to be, you know, they're from Los Angeles, San Francisco, Seattle. Oh, we want to be in downtown Tempe where it's hip and all that. Now we're seeing that trend is that where do you want to be? We want to be downtown. We want to be in downtown Phoenix and build that culture because it's still somewhat a frontier and you can stake your claim out there. So that's an exciting aspect of downtown.
Larry, as we said, you've been here for more than 3 decades and you've seen obviously trends. You've seen cycles up and down. What makes you optimistic that when it comes to transit-oriented development, people moving downtown, that's one where even if there's a bump, it won't be a real sustained bump?
I think what's happening now, you know, especially with education really leading the way in downtown Phoenix, is that we're diversifying. We're seeing now that the investment that the city made with biomedical, how that is paying off. You know, we see the U of A Cancer Center will be opening up very soon, and we'll see the announcement of their R&D facility. Those are our major projects. And so as we diversify and we're not locked into that real estate industry or the other ones that have, you know, caused severe valleys and mountains, that those things should flatten out. You know, I think that's going to be the trend in the future as well.
Larry Ortega is Executive Vice President with Colliers International. He specializes in the sale and leasing of retail properties. Larry, thanks for the time.
Thank you.